Blog Talk Radio.
2006, we all faced with the same bullshit. Black cop, white cop, it don't matter. Red cop, yo. A cop killer, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the loss is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law because they the real criminal. When a cop kills, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the loss is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law because they the real criminal.
Yo, the gang in blue steal the picture. Now they got tear gas and Billy Club too. And if you club dude, don't run from the challenge. Just cock back your hammers and pop one of the cabins. The average policeman lacks proper respect. So I get respect back with the Glock of the tech. For they had me on the deck, so blocking my neck. He'll catch this right hook and get dropped with the left. Who'd expect my enemy to look like me? Black cop showing off, he's just a crook like me. It's like we ignorant to our rights, we all think we should've left. Bust that heat for New Orleans and then left. Bust the phone for the Gulf Coast. They left people there with no hope, cause we poke folks. Most cops murder us and get slapped on the wrist. Uncle Tom MC scared to rap about this.
A cop killed, strictly murdered, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the loss is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law.
We're in the middle of a war. Bars on your windows and doors. Your home is a prison. The way we live in is poor. The Lord got gas. Act like we can't hold heat. That's the reason I speak. My folks can't stay sleep. Patrol our own streets. We're living in a police state. Y'all live behind steel gates to try to feel safe. Still race wars erupt. All my brothers are stuck behind prison bars. Leave scars and third eye shut. Rise up. You gotta make the revenue stack before physical combat. Your minds are attacked. So I got stacks of books. Getting my mind chiseled. Trying to stay wise. Exercise my mental. It's simple mathematics. My music is graphic. So this is what you get when the beast attacking. Get at us if you're ready to ride. This one here's for all my soldiers down. I'm never gonna hide.
A cop killer, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the loss is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law because they the real criminals. A cop kills, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the loss is minimal. Police is hiding behind the law because they the real criminals.
Yo, the new gang mentality, government immorality, worldwide brutality. I know they probably mad with me. Sad to see children living with lies told to the public. Cause we living with eyes closed to the fact that police get away with murder every day. Never pay for the people they hurt. A word up, the Patriot Act, that's the right back. Now pigs come in the crib and don't have to ask. Or even flash a warrant, they at war with my folks. Killing people cause they broke all over the Gulf Coast. Most folks obey the law, really might get stopped. And it's a 50-50 chance that you might get shot. And we not shocked to hear about cops getting shot. Cause we know how they do when they come on the block, making it hot. And when money stops, it's critical. Police hide behind the law cause they the real criminals.
A cop killer, strictly murder, they say wrongful death. When I kill, I'm an animal with no morals left. If a cop kills me, the law is minimal. Police is hide behind the law
edition of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon. Soon we will be joined by my co-pilot, Peter Fowler, calling from Arizona. And, you know, that was none other than Bashir, based out of Washington, D.C. That was my man, Bashir and Pay. And together they are Bashir, man. That's one of the best groups, one of the most revolutionary rap groups that you may have never heard of. And you know, I tell you, check them out. Google Bashir, man. Ooh, they got a lot of songs like that. You like those lyrics? They got many more songs that carry that kind of fire and lyrics, man. You can even punch in Bashir, Payshir, into YouTube, and they got a real good video up there that they did with Laylo, and you know, it's Yeah, it's that's music to my ears. Music, sweet music to my ears. So anyways, we got a terrific show lined up for you today. We're going to have Teresa Schoens from Philadelphia join us, and she is the daughter. She is one of the children, and, you know, she's the daughter of Russell Schoens, who is incarcerated. He's a political prisoner. He's a former Black Panther, and he's incarcerated in Pennsylvania right now. We're going to get into his story. You know, his full name, Russell, his nickname, Maroon Schoens. And we're going to get into, you know, his story, how he became incarcerated. He's currently serving two life terms. And like many political prisoners in this country, he's a Black man. He's of color. And like many political prisoners, he's facing he's doing time for a crime that he did not commit, and it's basically the state's, the U.S. government's way of punishing those who dare to resist and speak out. And we know the tremendous work that our brothers and sisters did on behalf of the struggle for liberation. In the 60s and the 70s, you know, the BLAs, the Black Panthers. I mean, we can, you know, just keep going on, you know, folks from SNCC. I mean, we can just, you know, and so, you know, we're going to get into his story. And then later in the show, we're going to be joined by Claude Marx, who is the director for Freedom Archives based out of California. And he's going to be talking about COINTELPRO 101, which is a brand new documentary that's done by Freedom Archives, and we're going to hear a little bit more about Freedom Archives, who they are, you know, what kind of work they do, and really learning more about COINTELPRO 101. And I want to, you know, give a brief message while I'm on the line right now, and I remind you guys at the end of the show, those of you that are based in the Washington, D.C. area, and actually those of you that are based in California, you can actually go to the Freedom Archives website. It's freedomarchives.org, and you can see some of the locations that they're going to be shown. They're going to be shown right here in Washington, D.C. this Saturday at Sankofa Video and Books on 2714 George Avenue Northwest. But like I said, you can go to the Freedom Archives website, freedomarchives.org, and just click on the COINTELPRO link on the right side of the page, and you'll see all of the different locations that they're going to be screening the very, very important documentary that just came out from Freedom Archives. And so it's going to be shown at places like University of Maryland's Nambua Cultural Center on the 16th of March at 7 p.m., District of Columbia, University of District Columbia, Monday, March 7th, from 6 to 8 p.m. But, you know, this is all stuff that, you know, is coming right off the website. So, like I said, if you're interested and you're living in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, you know, please go to the website and check it out. If you're in California, please go to the website and check it out. If you want to find out how you can obtain, how you can purchase the documentary, go to the website, because the documentary is going to be for purchase. And the great thing I like about Freedom Archives is that they, a lot of their resources that they get from the sales of their audio and video goes back into the movement to supporting our political prisoners who are you know, languishing right now in the bowels of the beast and some of the worst conditions known to man in U.S., you know, federal prisons. So we're going to hear more from Claude Marx, and Sister Teresa will be joining us about half after the hour. But right now I'm going to patch Peter Fowler, who is the co-pilot for this radical flight. It's going to be a smooth flight. You know, we're going to avoid all the bumps and all that stuff. But the conversation from the cockpit is gonna be heavy. It's gonna be heavy, and we're not showing any movies, so, you know, sit back, relax, know, no need to put on any earplugs. You know, can't use your iPod. Just, you know, just sit back, relax on this flight. And if you want to call in at any time, you want to call up to the cockpit, just call 347-945-5191. That's 347-945-5191, because this is the people's flight. And this radio show, this podcast, is as much yours as it is Peter and I's. So without further ado, I'm going to patch Peter through. And we're going to we really want the theme for folks to sink their teeth into throughout this show is that of our political prisoners, those that are incarcerated, those political prisoners who have died behind bars, some of our freedom fighters who have been terrorized and some assassinated by the funding and through the orders coming from the U.S. government, you know, through the likes of COINTELPRO and the FBI, you know, looking at Martin Luther King, looking at how the CIA, FBI, NYPD was behind the murder of Malcolm X, Medgar Evers. You know, these are things that we want folks to sink their teeth into, but we have so many political prisoners that are languishing behind bars right now, such as Chip Fitzgerald and Eddie Conway. I mean, I can go on, and we will throughout this show. So, you know, this show is an honor to them, and really, it's about bringing awareness so that somebody's who may be listening right now, you know, hopefully you'll feel compelled, you know, at the end of the show to find out to do more in terms of even writing letters from the outside and letting these political prisoners know that you know about this short story and that you care about them and that you appreciate the sacrifices that they made and perhaps even donate money to their legal appeals. And you know, there's another great, before I, you know, turn it over to Peter, there's another great organization that does a lot of work on behalf of political prisoners. That's the Jericho Movement. So I'll be giving you guys the websites to places like the Jericho Movement. I mean, it's the TheJerichoMovement.com. That's TheJerichoMovement.com. TheJerichoMovement.com. Go there. They do a ton of work around political prisoners. And so, you know, these organizations that already have an infrastructure set up, it's really good to support them. So please go to that website and, you know, you can subscribe to their listserv and really, you know, find out how you can help them help our brothers and sisters who are serving just unjust time behind bars for what their crime. Their crime is that they're fighting against the repression and terrorism that was being unleashed from the U.S. government on communities across America, and primarily communities of color. So anyways, without further ado, Peter, you're on the line. Welcome once again to Your World News, and I'm glad to have you as the co-pilot. Any introductory words about the show, about political prisoners, and your thoughts?
Most definitely, Solomon. As always, it's good to be back live with you. And, you know, tonight's show, these combined topics of political prisoners, and then as we talk about the COINTELPRO papers, which has largely to do with, you know, that government mechanism, the police state, the police government, police force known as the FBI. You know, it's a real exciting opportunity because these topics or the overarching topic of political prisoners is something that really gets at the core of Americanism and what America really is and what America really is about, and gets you know, it's the, you know, we're gonna look at the ugly underbelly of the beast tonight. looking at political prisoners and the process of mass incarceration and oppression. And to use the words of Angela Davis from a lecture she gave called Political Prisoners, Prisons and Black Liberation, we're going to look at, quote, the exploitative and racist core of society itself, end quote, all right? So, you know, that's really what we're looking at. You know, we're going to lay bare the fact that the core, the heart of America, right, you know, God bless America, land of the free, all that crap, you know, we're going to see that that's all just empty rhetoric, or worse yet, a deceitful lie, all right? And we're going to take a look at the fact that this society, this beast called America, is exploitative and oppressive and racist all at the same time. And, you know, the evidence is there. That's why this show is exciting, the opportunity to look at the history of that exploitation and that oppression and that racism in action to prove the fact, all right, that we're not just blowing smoke, we're not just making things up, we're not just coming out of left field with wild accusations, but we are pointing to historical fact and to contemporary reality. You know, we're talking about men and women who are in the prison system right now in 2011. Okay, so this is not just a lesson in history, but it's a lesson in civics as well. It's a lesson about what this country is really about. You know, so for those listeners who are not familiar with political prisoners in this country, you're not familiar with the COINTELPRO papers and the FBI's subversive efforts at attacking and oppressing dissidents, I hope this will be a wake-up call. And you know, there are resources out there, obviously, that you can look at. One of the best, I think, you know, as an introduction, is a book called The COINTELPRO Papers. Ward Churchill and Jim Vanderwall edit that book, and it has hundreds of original documents copied in it, you know, and it gives a historical background to it. And part of that historical background, Solomon, that's important, is to understand that this isn't something that just started with the struggles in the 60s and the 70s with the civil rights movement, the Black Panthers, but this goes way, way back. This goes back to just after World War II, when it was really formalized, you know, because of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. You know, the Red Scare came to the United States. J. Edgar Hoover was appointed into, you know, what became the FBI, you know, back in, I think it was 1919, 1918, and, you know, started, you know, the Palmer Raids right away. They started to round up dissidents. And then Marcus Garvey became the first black who was targeted for, you know, for what they were calling dissident opinions and so forth. So, you know, we're talking about historical fact. We're talking about contemporary reality. That's why it's exciting. And we're going to have a couple of people on tonight who I hope are going to shed some more light on the realities of those things from personal experience, painful personal experience, in the likes of Teresa Schultz, whose father is in prison now, not because he burned down a building or because he robbed a bank or because he shot somebody. No, why? Because of his political affiliations and his political beliefs and the people that he affiliated with who had political beliefs and affiliations that the U.S. government does not agree with. That's why that man's in prison, and that's why there are so many others in prison. You know, many of us might be familiar with, you know, Mumia Abu-Jamal. You know, some of us have heard of Geronimo Jijaga Pratt. You know, but not many people have heard of Russell Maroon Schultz. Not many people have heard of, you know, Marshall Eddie Conway or Chip Fitzgerald or Hugo Pinnell or, you know, so many. The list goes on and on of men and women who are still on lockdown, victims of this brutal and oppressive system that is alive and well in the United States. And so, you know, I want to just underscore that one more time and ending my remarks now is that, you know, the COINTELPRO papers, COINTELPRO as a subset of the FBI was shut down in the early 70s. But make no mistake, that operation and the forces that drove COINTELPRO are alive and well in 2011. And if you don't get a grip on that now, you better recognize, as you're listening to our show tonight, you better recognize that the forces that animated COINTELPRO are alive and well in 2011. And we can point particularly to the Patriot Act, right, Solomon? You might want to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the tenets of the Patriot Act. And so we see the same beast. We see the same beast marauding and devouring in 2011 today. So it's real, it's alive, and it's something we all need to be aware of, especially those of us that are on the left and that haven't fallen in line with the political status quo in this country. We need to know that the government sees us as potentially dangerous and as potential enemies. So we need to move forward with that in mind.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, there's this push. First of all, there's this push to extend, and I'm glad you gave that great context and that historical backdrop looking at Marcus Garvey. And it's interesting, it was a devil, none other than a devil on earth by the name of J. Edgar Hoover that was chasing after Marcus Garvey, and he was also the same devil, J. Edgar Hoover, who was behind the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, terrorizing him and his family, sending him letters to, you know, push Dr. King to commit suicide. He's rewarded with the name of a federal building.
You know,
the J. Edgar Hoover Building. You know, not too far from where I'm sitting right now. And so. You know, it. I'm glad you put that in that context because that son of a bitch was nothing less than a devil on earth, and you know, he's praised with the name of a federal building. That just kind of should give folks the context. Any country or nation that would name a any kind of building, especially a building, you know, that's federal in nature, after somebody of that ilk, that should give you, and that it still continues to stand. I mean, the name should be wiped away from that building, scrubbed away from that building, but the fact that it remains the name of that building, and it carries that moniker. I mean, should let us know fully, you know, what we're dealing with and what kind of atmosphere we're truly in. But as you mentioned with the Patriot Act. You know, some of us might know that around February 8th, the extension we know that much of the Patriot Act is extremely, extremely, extremely right wing, regressive, very, very stringent, you know, but three of the most regressive and three of the most nefarious components of the extension act of the Patriot Act are due to, you know, to be, I guess, either extended at the end of this year in December or to just be dissolved. And, you know, there's this push, you know, by some folks on both sides of Congress and the Senate as well as the House of Representatives to push this through, you know, to extend these regressive extensions of the Patriot Act. And what's interesting though is that the Democratic president, and I emphasize the Democratic because some of us are still mesmerized with this damn Democratic Party, thinking that it's the savior of people of color. It's some kind of liberating political party. It's like the total opposite of the Republicans. I mean, come on, people, we need to wake up. We really need to wake up and just look at the policies of your president, Barack Obama, and just compare them. Some of the policies in terms of foreign policy. I mean, shoot, some of the domestic policies and, you know, Barack Obama's willingness, you know, to support, you know, and to take a very laissez-faire, you know, position and to genuflect, you know, in front of the Israel lobby, you know, such as AIPAC and Israel itself, knowing that there are humanitarian crimes being committed with U.S. dollars, and he just, you know, signed into his budget, you know, wrote into his budget $3.25 billion to be quartered off to Israel's military, their military. But he also, with the Patriot Act, he supports an extension through, you know what I'm saying, through 2012 and beyond, the extension of those. And it was interesting. There are actually some Republicans that you know, voted against the extension of these three provisions within the Patriot Act. And it did fail by 7 votes. And but it's, we know that it's going to rear its head again. I mean, we know that they're going to vote again. There's some folks that are going to try to pass on it, you know, pass it through again. But, you know, so this is, you know, and there was a temporary extension that was signed by President Obama of the Patriot Act. But these extensions, I mean, one of which was, you know, is the surveillance provision. We know that when he was a Democratic candidate, Democratic senator and candidate for president of the United States, Peter, he supported FISA. He supported the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and voted for it. Not just supported, but he voted for it. And so one of those three provisions is that, you know, that surveillance. It also happens to be wiretapping, not just of your phones and your cell phone, but also of your internet. So these are the, why do we like harp on these things? Because within COINTELPRO, and I'm glad Peter mentioned, you know, one of the resources where you can find information on COINTELPRO, but you can just Google, you know, just type into Google, you know, or Start Page, or, you know, one of these other, Start Page, actually, for folks that are listening, startpage.com is actually a pretty good alternative to Google if you don't want a lot of your internet footprints being tracked. Start Page claims that they don't keep the same kind of internet footprints that Google does. So, if you know, but whatever you're using, you can type in counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO, and you should get a lot of things, a lot of documents and articles on COINTELPRO. But within COINTELPRO, there was wiretapping. Also, they didn't have cell phones around at that time. And so they wiretapped Dr. King, conversations that he had with his wife that should have been private, conversations he had with some of his comrades, you know, those types of things. And, you know, we know that they're very much illegal, but with the Patriot Act, these things have been written into as legislation. We know that the warrantless, you know, they can now, you know, under suspect of whatever they think that you may or may not be doing, they can break into your front door. They can break down your front door without having any kind of warrant. You know, so they can do this without any kind of warrant whatsoever. And so it's important that we know what we're dealing with, that we know the Patriot Act, we understand, compare and contrast it to COINTELPRO, because what we see now is history repeating itself, and history turning into a current event, as Heru, the great, you know, African poet, you know, said himself, you know, history is a current event. So, Peter, I don't know if you have any other, you know, comments regarding that. But also, I should mention also, you know, we look at Leonard Peltier. You know, I mean, Peter named a bunch, you know, and we could, and that's kind of plays to the significance of this show and shows like this and organizations like the Jericho Movement, the work that they're doing on behalf of political prisoners, because there are so many. The list goes on and on. There are exiled folks that would be political prisoners if they step back into the United States stolen borders, like Assata Shakur. You know, so it's really important that, and she's you know, one of the more well-known ones, but there are a lot of exiled political prisoners. And what's funny, what's interesting, Peter, you almost have to laugh to keep from crying from the fact that we have brothers and sisters decaying behind, you know, bars. And some of these brothers and sisters have done many, many, many years of of time in solitude, solitary confinement, which in and of itself is cruel and unusual punishment. And Russell Schultz has been in solitary confinement for a very, very, very long time. So it's as I said, you almost have to laugh, keep from crying, when you hear the U.S. government want to actually lecture other countries, you know, Cuba or China on their, you know, so their human rights record or their political prisoners. The U.S. wants to lecture Cuba on their political prisoners, you know, but, you know, failing to remember that the U.S. has far more political prisoners than Cuba does, and definitely more of color than Cuba does, and you know, it's and then looking into the deeper context that some of the Cuba's political prisoners, or if you want to call them that, you know, were henchmen for Fulgencio Batista, who had, you know, carried out extrajudicial killings, you know, supported and funded by the U.S. government, you know, as they supported their puppet President Batista. So, anyways, that's a story for another time. But all works into the context of the hypocrisy of American democracy. So, Pete, I don't know if you have anything else to say before we move on and continue with the show.
Yeah, I do. I have plenty to say. In fact, you might need to cut me off so that we can move on because. You know, this is an important issue, and it's something that we need to be aware of and to emphasize again. You know, this isn't something in the past, but it's something that the United States, the government apparatus, continues to concentrate its energies and efforts and its resources toward. The fact is now, you know, that the prison system in the United States is the means of political neutralization, you know. So for dissidents, for people who are radical on the left of the political spectrum, the anti-war movement would be just one example. And you know, I think about anti-war protesters. They're not always radical people, or necessarily radical people. They're not necessarily radical in their politics. A lot of them believe in the system, you know, in the concept of democracy in America, which, you know, I certainly don't. It's a fraud and a lie, but, you know, many of those people really do believe in the fundamental premises, yet are opposed to, you know, these imperialistic wars. And the government is, you know, it's well documented about how the government is infiltrating and undermining, in other words, trying to neutralize, you know, these relatively benign organizations who just want to push their country in the right direction to do the right thing. Even folks like that are being monitored and being subverted, you know. And you look at the explosion. We've talked about this on this show before, but it's important to do it in this context again. The explosion of the mass incarceration population in this country, particularly the population that's disproportionately of men of color, and so much of that has to do with the politicization of crime, you know, of political crime. It's no coincidence that, you know, the Black Panther Party splintered in the late 60s going into the 70s, around the same time the prison industrial complex started to balloon, and the whole, you know, Richard Nixon started his, you know, fight for law and order. You know, and we can look at that, and we can trace the parallels between the crackdown on the Black Panther Party, the Black Liberation Army, Civil Rights Movement, any movements for Black liberation in the United States, and the explosion of the prison industrial complex, and they go hand in hand. You know, we can't look at one without looking at the other, and if we look at what's going on today, you know, we see an explosion not just in prisons and county jails and so forth, but the explosion or the creation and proliferation of these high security units or these supermax prisons, right, in the United States. I mean, this is madness. In the United States of America, in the 21st century, we have these high security or supermax prisons. And let me read the description very, very briefly of one of these units that was actually a prototype. It said it was constructed some 30 feet underground in total isolation from the outside world, painted entirely white to induce sensory deprivation, with naked fluorescent lights burning 24 hours per day, featuring rules severely restricting diet, correspondence, reading material, and visitations. The high-security units were deliberately designed, listen to this, to psychologically debilitate those imprisoned there, all right? Think about that. Think about what I just read. Not just happening, not just as an anomaly, but as a matter of course and a matter of policy in the United States of America. The same United States that claims to be about democracy and about liberty, constructing and proliferating this massive network of prisons and high security units within prisons and supermax prisons that contain units like that, that have as their purpose the psychological debilitation of their captives. Now, you know, once upon a time there was this ideal that, you know, incarceration was about rehabilitation. Well, that's not even in the conversation anymore. It's about debilitation. Just think about that for a minute. You know, that the United States is purposefully debilitating hundreds of thousands of its own citizens in these supermax high security units and incarcerating, you know, well over 2 million in total now. In the prison industrial complex, and another short quote is instructive about the nature of these high security units and supermax prisons. That the prisoners are there to be reduced to a state of submission, essential for their ideological conversion. All right, and this is from a quote on a study of those institutions. So their purpose is to reduce prisoners to a state of submission essential for their ideological conversion. I mean, think about that, their ideological conversion. We're talking about ideas and belief systems. So it is in fact a crime to think outside the box in these United States. It is, in fact, a crime to think too far outside the boundaries of the acceptable ideological framework, all right? That is what is happening right now in this country. Yeah, it was going on back in the 30s and the 50s, and, you know, we can look at it historically, and we need to understand the historicity of it. But we need to understand its evolution and what the purpose of it is now, all right? And, you know, if we look at who the first targets were, we talked about Marcus Garvey, obviously, you know, and the beginning of the Black Liberation Movement under Garvey. And then the first organizations that were targeted by what developed into the FBI and eventually into COINTELPRO was the Communist Party and then the Socialist Workers Party. And, you know, these are people who have political beliefs that differ from the majority in America. And, you know, and so these are people who are being attacked and subverted and imprisoned and harassed and even murdered, all right, even killed, assassinations and so forth, because of their differing political opinions in the United States of America. We need to digest that and understand that this is the reality, not only of the history of this country, but of its current political climate. And then, you know, I'm amused, but I'm also annoyed whenever I get into a conversation with somebody about Marxism or socialism, and they say, well, you know, if it was such a great idea, then, you know, how come it hasn't taken root in the United States? Well, it's obvious. It has been attacked at every stage, every effort, every room and every corner of every room where socialism or Marxism has been espoused, the United States government has sought to crush it. And we can see that that's what the FBI was developed for, as a counterintelligence agency In other words, to seek out dissenting opinions and dissenting ideas, those ideas and opinions that were different from the maintenance of the status quo, all right, propping up of the capitalist state and the propping up of the ruling class and the furthering their agenda. Anything that was different from that was and still is sought out by the government to be crushed and to be demonized. You know, we had the Red Scare. Anybody who was considered to be an enemy back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, was labeled a communist. You know, and automatically, you know, it was like their, you know, like their Jerusalem Star that, you know, that the Nazis put on Jews in the 30s, or their Scarlet Letter if you're a literary fan. You know, they've been labeled, they've been identified as a subversive. And you know, late 50s and 60s, during the height of COINTELPRO, you know, we look at the language of the FBI, you know, and they looked at the Panthers and those other groups. I mean, even the SCLC and SNCC, you know, they considered them to be what, hate groups, right? I mean, you know, these are groups who are fighting for the rights of American citizens, you know, to be served at a lunch counter. And to you know, get a room at a hotel, and to vote, you know, and to not be beaten, you know, when they go to use public accommodations, and they're labeled hate groups, you know, these are the people that are being attacked, and oppressed by the United States government. So you know, we need to put it in that context and understand the ideological battle being waged here, you know. And,
right.
And another thing too is if I could take just a minute to talk about, you know, why it's important to understand what's going on in the system, in terms of how some of these people get into prison. Why are there so many people, you know, incarcerated? Well, you know, obviously the prevailing theory is, well, they did something wrong. You know, I mean, what a coincidence. Isn't it amazing that all these people who are affiliated with the Black Panther Party, you know, ended up with these murder charges levied against them? You know, and you know, when you take the time to do the research, you find out how each and every one of them was framed, was set up. You know, false charges were levied against them. Somebody was killed, and then, you know, it was operatives in the U.S. government that levied charges against these people. And then we get to the prisons or the court system. We've talked about this before too, about the racism inherent in the so-called justice system in this country, but it goes even further than that in terms of the not just the incompetence, but the purposeful dishonesty of the prosecutorial process. Once these individuals reach court, reach the point of their trials. You know, the way that evidence is manipulated and the way that evidence is just created out of thin air on behalf of the prosecution is absolutely criminal in and of itself, and it's well documented. It's richly documented, and we see that the system is set up, is designed to incriminate, indict, and convict, and then, you know, put in jail and throw away the key. These individuals who have divergent ideas and divergent agendas. So,
right.
You know, we need to keep that in mind, and we need to keep the gravity of that in mind, and understand what's really at stake here.
Exactly. Yeah. And it is. I mean, it's loud and clear. And you know, it's unfortunate. You don't get this kind of critical analysis anywhere in the corporate media. You know, you get it from independent media like this and like so many other outlets out there. You know, we're a big supporter of Black Agenda Report, Vox Union, and, you know, going on and on. There's a lot of independent media out there, folks that are doing everything that they can to get news and information out there. But there should be, you know, if this was really a democratic society, There would be unequivocally, if it was a democratic society, there would be unequivocally be some kind of juxtaposition and contrast of COINTELPRO to the Patriot Act, or even if they didn't want to, you know, juxtapose it to, but breaking down the Patriot Act and these provisions, you know, and you know, one of the provisions, I named one of them before, but one of the other provisions, you know, has to do with them, the government, them, the U.S. government, actually having access to your library records. So you take out a book, you know, I don't know, a book on, you know, I mean, you said before, you know, could be Das Kapital, or, you know what I'm saying, or it could be the Communist Manifesto, or it could be, you know, any book that they deem a question mark, you know, and, you know, they have this database, and you know, John Smith, who took that book out, you know, now has a little tracker on him. You know, Peter Fowler has a little tracker on him, you know, and so every library book that he has taken out in the past and that he will take out in the future will be monitored. You know, that's one of the provisions. That's one of the provisions, folks. That is one of the provisions that Barack Obama wholeheartedly supports, an extension beyond, you know, 2011 into 2012 and beyond. This is, you know, and he just signed a temporary provision of these. It was, I think a 3-month provision beyond when they're supposed to end. You know, he just recently signed that, you know, a few days ago. But this is what we're looking at. These are, I mean, you know, this is not just beyond like a violation of your privacy. I mean, these are direct attacks on your civil liberties. I mean, you know, you're gonna be looking at my library. What library books I take out, and really, it comes down, Peter. When it comes down to who gets charged, who gets targeted, and whose house gets raided, sometimes, Peter, it's merely a matter of you know, this arbitrary decision that you know these morally corrupt individuals are making themselves. So, do you want somebody that's already morally corrupt to be making this kind of arbitrary decision in terms of, oh yeah, I think this person we need to really look into further, or I think this is a person we need to raid their home, and we know what happens. You know, these raids are not always, I mean, as if any raid is clean, but when I say clean, I'm talking about some of these raids are far from you know. Innocuous. You know, some of them are flat out deadly. Sometimes people's homes get raided, and people get killed in cold-blooded, unarmed, because, you know, those who raided the homes, you know, thought this person was reaching for something, or that, you know, or that they just came in there with a trigger-happy mentality, and they just started bucking off shots. And that's what I like, you know, the song that we opened with Pay Share and Real Criminals. And, you know, he's talking about, you know, in a lot of cases, the cops are the criminals, but unlike ordinary citizens that, you know, murder somebody in cold blood that may get manslaughter or murder one or murder two. Oftentimes the police, you know, at worst might just lose their job. You know, they might just lose their job, Peter. And that's it. They might lose. They might get suspension for a couple weeks or until the case is resolved, and then they'll get the job back. Or in worst case scenario, they might just lose their job flat out. But not their freedom, Peter. Not their freedom.
It's really the norm for those individuals to not face any kind of.
Of course.
Yeah, and there's numerous examples just within the FBI itself of the their operatives who routinely, you know, have been the spokesman for these cases that the government brings against people who just routinely lie and perjure themselves in open court as they frame up their innocent victims, you know, and it's a matter of record now, you know, that there are. Operatives that have, you know, lied in court on numerous occasions, framed innocent people, offered false evidence. Thomas Curran is just probably one of the most notorious examples. And, you know, he's actually given testimony, you know, after the fact, that, you know, his false testimony has been responsible for the imprisoning of just numbers of people. And he's never been charged with anything, not even perjury, you know, nothing. He's not even lost his job. So, you know, that's another thing to keep in mind is, you know, these government operatives are perpetrating heinous crimes with impunity. So, you know, the perpetration of a crime has everything to do with, you know, who's defining what crime is and who the perpetrator is, you know, in the eyes of the state. And another thing to that's important too, and I want to bring this up because you and I were talking about it off the air a little while ago about how the American public is so stupefied with entertainment and amusement, and one of the major offenders being the boob tube, you know, watching television, and the way that, you know, television is propaganda. It's important to understand that, you know, you think you're watching just innocuous entertainment, but what's pertinent to our conversation has to do with the forensic science that has developed, you know, over time, and the way the FBI has used forensics to nail you know, dozens of probably hundreds and thousands of people at this point in time, you know, by bringing this forensic or scientific evidence to bear in court, whereas, you know, the record is clear that scores of people have been wrongly convicted on the basis of so-called forensic evidence brought by the FBI that was entirely wrong, just flat-out fabrications, lies brought by just by operatives of the FBI. And, you know, and the thing is that roughly two-thirds of the over 400 forensic facilities now operating in the United States, all right? So forensic facilities across the country, you know, in Baltimore, in D.C., in you know, the major cities and mid-sized cities across the country that have forensic facilities, they have followed the lead of the FBI, and they just don't bother to get certification by laboratory accreditation boards. And so, you know, in other words, what that means is, you know, a lot of this forensic evidence, the stuff that's been brought to court as scientific, right, as if it's ironclad because it's forensic, is wrong. I mean, everything is from simple stuff like fingerprinting, you know, and blood matching, and, you know, and those kind of things are just wrong. Now, how does that tie in with, you know, the stupefaction of the populace? Well, you know, look at the offerings on television now, and how many shows have to do with policing and crime. You know, you look at Law and Order, you know, and you have these valiant cops, you know, and these regal lawyers who are out fighting for truth and justice and so forth. And then, you know, the other show, the crime scene investigation shows, you know, CSI, and, you know, they portray these forensic workers as being objective and, you know, seeking truth and just out to find the truth of the story. Well, that works in a propagandistic fashion because, you know, when we read about, well, forensic evidence was admitted in court against say a guy like Russell Schultz, even though his case didn't even get that close, but you know, for somebody who a charge is levied against, they bring forensic evidence and case closed because we have forensic evidence, so we can't dispute it if there's DNA involved. Well, yes, we can, because we're not watching, you know, CSI on television. We're talking about CSI in real life, and the forensic evidence that is brought is oftentimes flat out wrong, and it's all part of that bigger picture of criminalization of the underclass, which, as we know, is by and large people of color in this country. So, you know, we need to understand the role of propaganda just in television and movies and things that seem to be innocuous and mere entertainment. You know, they're not. You know, there's a message and an agenda being pushed in the entertainment industry and in Hollywood, clearly. And so we need to have a more critical eye and really understand the understory and the background behind, you know, especially as it has to do with law and order and crime and those kind of things. Not to mention these stories about war. You know, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation about how that's propagandized and glorified through Hollywood. But just for our discussion, the way that crime and the criminal justice system is corrupted and flat-out prostituted by the apparatus of the state for the purpose of neutralization of political opposition, and also for the continued repression of the underclass. That's how we need to understand this.
Right, and you know, I think that's why, you know, when you look at, you know, technology and popular culture, you know, I think that if it's the right kind, they can play a major role in resistance. I mean, and that's why, you know, if we put on our critical thinking, you know, caps, they should be sewn to our heads. We should never take them off. But if we found a way to surgically remove them from our heads, let's put them right back on. But if we look at things critically, we'll see that the popular culture that is the most resistance-oriented, and what I mean is resistance-oriented, it bucks the system. It steps way outside of the proverbial box. It doesn't accept norms that have been created, purposely created, by some white corporate execs, you know, by some liberal or conservative white corporate execs who are pimping the African-oriented genre, such as hip-hop culture. These folks that step as far away from those models that have been created to you know, psychologically damage, you know, the minds of black and brown-skinned youth, and to continue to obfuscate, you know, even, you know, white youth that are attracted to the genre. You know, if you're outside of that mold, Peter, as you know, we've had this discussion before, if you're way outside that mold and you don't accept those norms, you don't accept those roles, those cookie cutter roles, then you resist and you talk about the institution, the injustices of the institution, that of even the media, that, like, you know, let alone the U.S. government, but just even attacking the institution of the corporate media for what it is, you know, and you know how it operates as a fourth branch of the U.S. government. If you just talk about, you know, real cultural edification and talking about African history in your lyrics, as so many artists did during the golden era when I grew up, you know. If you just talk about those things, you know, you are marginalized, methodically, purposefully marginalized. But let alone talk about something political. Talk about political prisoners. As I played a couple weeks before, you know, the song, new song by or quasi recent new song of Dead Prez, Malcolm Garvey Huey. You know, that song is. Routinely, I mean, under the current constructs, that song is never going to be played. And so, but when we look at popular culture, that music by Dead Prez, you know, music by Mr. Lyf and Afrikabatic, we could just go on and on, you know, by the Public Enemies of the 80s and 90s, and even beyond. I mean, Public Enemy has still been making music, you know. And if you look at their use of popular culture within, you know, the constructs of hip-hop, rap, and rap music, it plays a part. It plays a part in the struggle, for liberation. It plays a part in resistance. But the apparatus that is plays such a major role in people's repression, not just within the U.S., but beyond, because we know multinational corporations and the U.S. government don't just do their job in terms of repressing and exploiting labor and here in the U.S., but they exploit labor, and they exploit people's land, and they plunder, you know, in places like Congo with the mineral coltan and gold and platinum and uranium. I mean, we see this throughout minerally rich so-called, you know, developing nations or so-called third world nations. We see this. I mean, this has been the modus operandi of the U.S. government and other Western governments as well. I'm not going to let them off the hook, you know, the likes of Belgium and France and Britain and Canada. Oh, they play a very dirty role as well. So it brings me back to the point of filmmaking, you know, all right? When we look at folks that step outside the box and make some powerful documentaries, like this documentary that we're talking about, COINTELPRO 101, and Claude Marks, you know, will be joining us in about 15 minutes to discuss that. Teresa Schultz is going to be joining us on another show. Something came up, and she was unable to, you know, someone's, you know, wondering why she didn't join us at 8:30. That's because something came up unexpectedly, and definitely extenuating circumstance. So when we're able to reschedule her again, we're definitely gonna have her on the show, and hopefully also have her brother on the show as well, because they both are powerful advocates for their father and true, you know, warriors and warrioresses, you know, in this struggle to not just free their father, but to bring justice and freedom for all political prisoners, wherever they may be, because if it goes on unabated, we're going to continue to see people recycled into the system as, you know, new political prisoners. And I guess, and as Pierre, you said before, when you look at the Supermax and you look at some of these conditions, you know, Russell Soans is right now on 23-hour lockdown. He's on 23-hour lockdown. Okay? 23-hour lockdown. His brother was a former Black Panther Party member. You know, he's behind bars for a crime that he did not commit. I'm not going to get, you know, into the story, because I know that we're going to have his children on the show to really delve deep into it. But in 2005, also this man was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and when we look at even popular culture, M1 of Dead Prez, you know, helped raise money for brother Russell Schultz, you know, as a part of a benefit tour called the benefit tour was called Free the Hood, and so we know that you know, M1 of Dead Prez, you know, helped raise money for brother Russell, you know, through the use of the popular medium, you know, rap music, you know, or hip hop music, you know. So it's really imperative that we educate ourselves, and that we don't take our eyes, you know, far off the ball. I mean, there's so many issues to look at in terms of injustices that are going on within the U.S. and beyond. But this is one of them, you know, and as Dr. King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So even in those places where you think that justice is going on, when we have political prisoners languishing, I'm talking about 23 hours a day. I mean, people could just think about it, how confined you feel sometimes when maybe you're living in a cold area and there might be or area that's prone to a lot of snow, and you just can't get out of the house because they just, you know Mother Nature just dropped 3 feet of snow in your area, and you're in the house for your house with TV and refrigerator and all those other things, you know, in your home for you know, a couple, 3-4 days, you know, as we experienced last year in the Washington D.C. area, And you just like, you, I mean, I can't wait to get back out, man, and run some errands, this, that, and the other. Now imagine being in a little ass cell, a small cell, no TV, hard bed, you know, one sheet, one blanket, little thin pillow, and it's just you in that cell,
23 hours a day. If anyone is going to try to tell me that that is somehow not cruel and inhumane punishment, you're kidding yourselves. And there, matter of fact, there are other governments. Like you look at the government of Norway. They have in the past refused to allow the U.S. to extradite people who have absconded from the U.S. They absconded, you know, so-called U.S. law enforcement folks that were you know, seeking to, you know, bring them to justice, whatever that means. And they were in Norway, and the government of Norway said no. And the basis of the government of Norway, not saying that they, you know, they didn't say, you know, we're picking sides in terms of saying this person is innocent. It had nothing to do with them saying whether this person was innocent or guilty. It was just they could, in a clear conscience, they could not, in a clear conscience, send that person, knowing that if they went back to the U.S., that they would be sent to a U.S. prison. On the basis that U.S. prisons and the U.S. prison system is cruel and inhumane, you know, to those that are behind its bars. It's not based on reform or rehabilitation. It is based on capital. It is based on capital, and when they let you out, the way that it is set up is that you carry around this felony, even though you might have done 15 years. For a felony crime, you might have done 15 years. And when you get out, if you do 15 years, man, you best believe I'm expecting that, yo, I did my time. I should be able to go out here, vote, do this, that, and the other. But nah, in some places like Florida, you can't vote. But also, you did the felony, you're carrying around this felony tag labeled on your record. So you apply for jobs, and there's a whole bunch of jobs that you're probably not going to get. Because you have this felony label. So you're there busting your ass trying to work and provide for your family and kids who haven't seen you for 15 years, and you're trying to provide for them and to be, you know what I'm saying, a contributing member of your community, and you can't find a job. So, what are you to do? You know what I'm saying? So some folks, they turn back to, you know, maybe a petty crime, you know, theft here and this and the other, and they get pinched the next time they go back and they're doing more time. So this time they're doing 27 years. I mean, come on. It's based on capital, and it's based on recidivism rates being as high as they possibly can. This government, its prison system is no way, shape, form, or fashion based on justice, equality, or any kind of reformation. It's just simply not. Rehabilitation is the furthest thing from that, because you start to have people being rehabilitated and going out there and being able to find jobs and contribute to their community, then you take away a large chunk of the private, you know, these private businesses that have been auctioning off, that have been paying millions of dollars to have their products made in these prisons, you know, such as Tommy Hilfiger, Eddie Bauer, Dell, Microsoft. I mean, these are all Victoria's Secrets. These are all companies that have their products made in various prisons. And it's you know, and you can, as we said, you can find them on the stock market, the CCA, Correction Corporation of America, the Geo Group, it used to be called Wackenhut. So these all have a role to play. All have a role to play in the whole entire context of what we're talking about. And so, when we have the opportunity to speak out, and, Peter, you and I have spoken about this time and time again, but when we have the opportunity to speak out and write out, that is to write, you know, strong words, whether it's on a blog or an article or something, or if it's a poetry piece that one of us decides to present at a local coffee house, or, you know, in your college dormitory, or wherever it may be, you know, speaking out against institutional racism, speaking out against imperialism, corporate plunder, speaking out even speaking out against institutional sexism. I mean, these are all forms of resistance. These are all forms of resistance. And those that are in power, you have to understand, those forms of resistance that have the that might have the ability to reach the masses. Because once you write something and you put it out there, it can get promulgated, it can get distributed by the next person. So somebody writes something, and they send it to me. Wow, it's powerful. I send it to Peter and all 200 or 400 people on my email list, or boom. So you might have 175 people that actually take the time to read that piece, and somebody reads it, and it gets sent out there, you know. And so they understand that. That's why they do everything they can to prevent those kind of pieces, those kind of artists, from making their way to from the airwaves to the corporate television airwaves, and definitely prevent them from going through Hollywood. So when we have films that come along and independent filmmakers come along, like the brothers and sisters of Freedom Works, and putting out something like a COINTELPRO and 101, it's important that we support it. Even those of us that know a whole bunch about COINTELPRO, yes, COINTELPRO 101 may not be a big surprise to you, but what COINTELPRO, you have to think, you know, and how you became educated and edified about COINTELPRO years ago, and how that was important in terms of your transition, in terms of stepping a little bit further outside the box and seeing the apparatus for what it is. Now, would you want to take that opportunity away from somebody who has a nascent understanding, a nascent at best understanding of COINTELPRO? No. So you have to understand COINTELPRO is a perfect piece for some folks whose minds are a virtual tabula rasa when it comes to COINTELPRO 101. It's a perfect starting point for those folks to really learn about COINTELPRO and you know how repressive it was to the American Indian movement, how oppressive it was to the Chicano movement, and the Ricardo how it supported and backed the murder of folks like Ricardo Falcon. It's an important piece within that context, because I mean, what a beautiful thing if this was being shown in hundreds of colleges and universities across America, and what a beautiful thing if it was even being shown and you shouldn't even have to wait till a college or a university to see that. If you're a part of one, you should be, you know, they should be being shown in public high schools and in social studies and civics courses. Because if this country actually gave a damn in terms of not allowing the history to repeat itself, Peter, they would support these kind of films. They would support this kind of true history. It's not something made up. It's not. It's real U.S. history. It's, you know, it surely is. But if they really wanted to see an end of a true end of injustices and see a wave of police and law enforcement agents, coming out of the woodworks that actually are egalitarian in mind and not laden with the abuse of power and institutional racism all throughout their mind and psyche, then they would, of course they would support it. But they don't, because the U.S. government, as we know, could give, you know, two craps about justice and equality. And the only way that it's going to change is if those of us on the grassroots level spread the word and to everyone, from your younger brothers and your sisters and your nieces, to your children, to people in your community, to people in your school, your classrooms, across the board, that you demand and COINTELPRO 101 to be shown. And if it's not shown, you find a space and an agency for it to be shown somewhere, whether it's in your dorm room or whether it's in your house, whether it's in the basement of a church or a community center, and you have these dialogues. And that's when you're able to shift people's focus of people who didn't have that understanding before, and now folks that are now better prepared to be mobilized. You cannot mobilize folks unless they have that understanding
of what they're dealing with, that background, that contextual understanding, that contextual history of the injustice that is in, that is latent within that piece of that piece of legislature, or within that society, or within that government. We can't possibly expect to see any kind of change in the fabric of American society in terms of the bloody and dirty, caked in stains that are within that tapestry of injustice. We can't expect to have them removed by the people unless the people actually know that they exist. And so, without further ado, I see that we have Brother Claude Marx on the phone, and I'm really, as I've said before, this brother and his comrades that he works with at Freedom Archives have been doing some tremendous work, and it's even before the making of this documentary, COINTELPRO 101, which I'm so happy to be a part of, a collective of individuals in the Washington D.C. metropolitan area who are doing what we can to have this shown throughout the area. So, without further ado, I want to welcome on Brother Claude Marx. He's joining us from California. He's the director of Freedom Archives. And Claude, can you hear me?
Yes. Thanks for asking me on, Brother Solomon.
Not a problem. And joined by my co-host Pierre Fowler. The time that we have you on, I want to actually get started. I want to kind of ask you, just get things rolling. And if you could give Peter, myself, and our listeners a background of what Freedom Archives is, the genesis of Freedom Archives, and what the overarching goals are of Freedom Archives.
Well, maybe I can start with saying what the goal is, which is to take responsibility for preserving radical history and culture, something that we can't leave to other folks. And we've been, you know, very blessed by having a lot of materials in our possession for quite a long time that deals exactly with that, you know, various social justice movements, various people who, whether they've survived or whether they're locked up, have had a lot to say and a lot to do in terms of a struggle for liberation and self-determination for various peoples. And a lot of cultural performers that over the many years have seen themselves and their cultural work as part of a radical movement. So our purpose is not only to preserve and make available that amazing history, to try to make the connections to give people access to it so that they can repurpose it. And then we ourselves have produced a series of both audio and video documentaries that tries to bring to the forefront issues and struggles that we feel are pertinent to, you know, developing from this point forward.
Great, Mark. Thank you. This is Peter Fowler. And I want to ask you kind of a two-part question. Noam Chomsky wrote a piece in the late 70s called COINTELPRO, What the Bleep Was That? And then you all have recently put together COINTELPRO 101. So if you could just real briefly, if you had to answer that question, Noam Chomsky's question, for a beginner, what the bleep was that, that COINTELPRO, and then, you know, just as a lead-in into COINTELPRO 101, and tell us about COINTELPRO 101.
Well, COINTELPRO stands for the Counterintelligence Program. In and of itself, it was actually a formal program that was under the aegis of the FBI, but also directed from the White House under a number of administrations, that its purpose was basically to attack and destroy the leadership and the organizations that were at the forefront of challenging the racism and the foreign policies of the United States. So that, you know, is the formal aspect of it. Of course, it's predated by a tremendous amount of history of attacking the labor movement, the Communist Party, Garvey and the Garveyites. But in the more modern period, COINTELPRO is a formal program, attacks the Puerto Rican independence movement, the black liberation movement, starting with organizations like SNCC and CORE, is responsible for surveillance of significant leaders and in some cases their assassination, the attempt to destroy organizations both through fomenting contradictions internally among organizations, imprisoning leadership, the development of death squads such as the Goon Squad and Wounded Knee, the massive gathering of intelligence on movements like the Puerto Rican Independence Movement, where there's close to 200,000 people who are placed under surveillance in such a significant way that they can't get employment because of their dedication to defeating U.S. colonialism in this colony. Those are some examples. So as a program, it has a finite beginning and end, but as a form of militarized policing and counterinsurgency, it's something that predates it by, from the point of inception of the so-called settlement, the invasion from Europe, and continues today, in fact, through, you know, many examples. So we felt, because of our last film, which was called Legacy of Torture. Legacy of Torture was a relatively short documentary that chronicles the attack on members of the Black Panther Party, starting from their capture in 1973 in New Orleans, where they were, or many were tortured, to a grand jury that starts in 2003 and reaches a point in 2005 where a number of people are actually jailed in San Francisco. This series of events leads to what's called the San Francisco 8 case. And in that film, we made it with a couple of intentions, both to talk about torture and to initially bring the concept of COINTELPRO back into the current lexicon, because in this particular case, a case in which people are arrested after 36, now 40 years, for something that was dismissed in San Francisco courts in 1975 because of the use of torture. You know, this is being re-raised to try to vilify the history, in this case of the Black Panther Party, but also to instill fear in people who are feeling a renewed commitment to struggling against what the U.S. is doing and what it's about. So we touched on it, and we felt like the issue of COINTELPRO had to be explained more broadly and had to be discussed in terms of the many movements that were, in fact, impacted by it. So that's the genesis of the film, which we start shortly after A Legacy of Torture comes out in 2007.
Right. And some of those movements that I've had the benefit of seeing this film, and I really was impressed with the work that you guys did in putting this together. You know, some of those movements, because you mentioned the Black Panther Party, and you just mentioned that, you know, there are other movements that you chronicled throughout the film, which you did. Can you give us our listeners an overview of why you felt it was important to have the story of the American Indian Movement, you know, and the repression that was experienced, you know, within the those within the indigenous American community that dared, you know, fight back or resist, as well as the Chicano movement, because I think a lot of folks are not so familiar with AIM or the Chicano movement. Could you give us an overview of them and your thought process of, in terms of putting those in the film as well?
Sure. the struggle of indigenous people, as we know, starts from the first moment that people like Columbus stepped foot in the Western Hemisphere. The resistance of indigenous people to European invasion isn't new any more than the Middle Passage and the struggle against slavery, or the colonization of Puerto Rico, which happens in 1898 after a victory against Spanish domination, or the expansion of the United States through the capture of northern Mexico. All of these are, military endeavors, jumping forward to a period, in the late 60s, where in 1969 you have the takeover of Alcatraz, one of the early significant Native American occupations of what was then federal land, as it was claimed, and a former U.S. prison. And not only was that an 18-month occupation, but it also led to a lot of other land struggles, a renewed sense among indigenous people that they could succeed in winning back some, not just respect, but some, literally winning back control of some land that had been occupied and out of their control for many generations. This doesn't, of course, happen in a vacuum. In that particular period, we see the success of a lot of revolutionary movements and liberation struggles around the world. In that period, we're seeing the beginnings of the defeat of U.S. imperialism by Vietnam, which was not only a political but a military accomplishment that ends in 1975 with the U.S. being chased out. These kinds of movements gave strength to the idea that there could be a significant transformation of power relations in the world that could include a reshaping of, what we look at today as the national boundaries of the United States. And the indigenous struggle in Wounded Knee, of course, is attacked very viciously and militarily in direct confrontation by U.S. military, but also in relationship to the death squads that were created through the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the U.S. government, called the Goon Squads. Those attacks resulted in scores of people being killed and arrested. And despite that, the American Indian Movement tried to maintain its momentum. And there were other land occupations that actually last into the 70s. So we felt that this was a significant story to tell in our film, in part because we want to draw attention to people like Leonard Peltier, who has been a political prisoner for over 30 years and is a literal and a symbolic casualty of the attempt of the U.S. to retake Wounded Knee and the Pine Ridge Reservation. But also it's a testament to the many, many, many generations that have resisted U.S. colonialism and the taking of the rights of indigenous people away. And so this, to me, having been around those struggles and having been on occupied Alcatraz, it seemed really appropriate that struggle be seen in the context of counterinsurgency. Historically, it's true, and few people know about it. And I think that is true of many of the other struggles that we try to touch on. The film itself is an attempt to start to open that door, both for people who came into this world since those days, but also the people who may not have been aware of its happening. And it's a history, the history of COINTELPRO, or the militarized attack against radical movements in the U.S., is not one that's commonly taught. And so we felt like here was an opportunity to not only talk about it, to talk about the political prisoners that remain locked up in U.S. prisons from all of these movements, but also to make connections to the ways in which, you know, post 9/11 under the Patriot Act, the legalization of a lot of what was deemed illegal and shocking in the mid-1970s when Congress actually held hearings. And to also point out that no agent or agency of the U.S. or local police has ever really been punished for the violence unleashed in this period of the formal period of COINTELPRO, whereas people who were victimized by it in one way or the other either are martyred, people like Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, who were killed in 1969 in Chicago, or for that matter, people who are, you know, of that era, you know, are in the 30th, 40th year, as I mentioned before, of imprisonment because of their political commitment. So we try to open that door with this. And then on the website, we have a lot of additional material that people can read and dig into, as well as curricula that we hope can be a basis for utilizing a film like this in the classroom, since the books aren't ever going to utter a word about any of it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's too true, Claude, and I applaud your efforts to remedy that. And I also applaud the language that you used in terms of wanting to bring COINTELPRO back into the lexicon of the public discourse today. And, you know, just in terms of that, let me ask you, you mentioned the resistance of indigenous people on this continent and the resistance of Africans in America, and there's of course other streams of political thought that was deemed dangerous by the U.S. government, we saw the labeling of groups like the Black Panthers as hate groups, and of course there was the Red Scare with communists and so forth. Now to bring that current lexicon back into play, what kind of parallels would you draw, for people today who don't have the historical background, but what kind of parallels would you draw between, you know, that old language, you know, the hate groups, the communists, and the kind of language that's being used today that is really indicative of the kind of police state that still exists, even, you know, post, you know, the formal COINTELPRO period, but the kind of police state that we know still exists. What kind of parallels would you draw? What kind of language do we need to listen for when the apparatus is speaking that same language of oppression?
Well, I think there, unfortunately, are too many examples, but maybe we can hit on some of them. I mean, most generally, you know, the level of Islamophobia, the kind of anti-immigrant language that we're not only hearing but seeing deployed in places like Arizona, the ways in which the imprisonment of people in control units because of their adherence to the Muslim faith in the federal system, there are communications management units that are special prisons that are designed to isolate people of the Muslim faith. The criminalization of dissent through the use of terminology like terrorism when it's applied to arson or other property crimes, when it deals with the Green Scare, for example, the ways in which radical environmentalists and animal rights people are characterized and given humongous sentences, 20-plus years for acts, whether or not they've been committed, that really amount to some minor property crimes. This is about trying to attack movements, not just because they're large and effective, like the groups like AIM and the Panthers were, but because of their potential. And I think one of the lessons that the state, the government, has drawn from the experience some 30, 40 years ago was to not allow movements to develop into a level of effectiveness where they actually can start to really challenge not only people's thinking, but actually be in the streets and challenge some of the directions that we're headed in. And so you see under Obama, an extension, if not an intensification, of the defense of national security through legal means by not allowing information about things like the rendition programs from being explored in the courts and being challenged, and the justification of some of these totally off-the-hook sentencing of people who, are political, to the use of the grand juries now in the Midwest that are about challenging support, particularly for Palestine and to some extent Colombia as well, in a period when public opinion is actually more open to the arguments of challenging Zionism and the state of Israel and how it's functioned, and in redeveloping a level of support, if not a boycott, of the state of Israel in support of the right of the Palestinian people to fight for their own liberation. These kinds of issues are being dealt with in a preemptive way through a form of repression. And as I said, I don't feel it's fairly seamless, if not more intense now under Obama than it was under Bush even. And the so-called Justice Department is even more active than it has been in the last 10 years in terms of pursuing forms of repression and politically directed attacks. The acceptance by the public of the rollback of so-called civil rights in the United States in being justified by a war against terrorism, and the acceptance of that is particularly alarming to a number of people, myself included, and is indicative of an even more intensified form of police state or thought control or preemptive political attacks. And so the issue of COINTELPRO as a body of history, I think is really important to understand that, what we're dealing with today isn't simply an anomaly, but just a further development and an extension of a very repressive intent by this government.
Right. Thank you for that. I mean, that was a wonderful, in-depth description of this tangled web that we're within. And before you came online, we were actually discussing, what you touched, a little bit about what you touched on, with the Patriot Act and how Obama has supported this extension of those three provisions, that happen to be, some of the more regressive provisions within the Patriot Act, far beyond, what is being proposed. And my final question for you, Claude, is as an educator, I fully plan on using this DVD as a teaching tool within my classes and with students and the programs that I work with students on, on in terms of when we show films. But I really look forward to using it as a teaching tool within, the conventional classroom, because the dialogue that I expect to facilitate that I expect that students will facilitate as well when they see this for the first time is going to be amazing. That's going to lead to more questions and more dialogue, and as we know, that's an important component in this quest for liberation and struggle to end these ongoing injustices that start right here, in the United States of America, not just domestically, but they go outside the borders. my final question for you, Claude, is what can people listening right now, what can they do to support? Because one of the things that I've had off air with some comrades is that one of the things that I like about Freedom Archives that I've heard about your work is that a lot of your work goes back into helping these political prisoners who are languishing behind bars right now. And I as if putting out the film was not enough, because putting out the film is tremendous. But the fact that you and folks within your organization make it a note of it to use some of the resources, and I don't know what portion, but use some of the resources to go back into the fight to support, you know, brothers and sisters who are political prisoners. What can folks do to just to basically help out? What can they do to support your work and not just COINTELPRO 101, but also just the work of Freedom Archives?
Well, you know, the literal support, you know, is easy to do if you go to our website. You know, if people feel compelled to make a contribution, of course, that's wonderful. We're a grassroots organization. We, you know, don't thrive on the largesse of any of the nonprofit corporate world. You know, not to say that we've never gotten a grant. You know, if we do get grant money, it's by and large through, you know, for the purposes of a specific project rather than operating and keeping our doors open. And we're in our 12th year, and we've been building slowly and carefully on a very different kind of model, which is about serving the community, being a part of a community, and then asking that community to weigh the value of what we do on the basis of what they see and the service that we provide. So, you know, that's what we're about. And, you know, of course that's important, but I think, as you say, we try to develop media that, with the idea that it be utilized to strengthen both educational work and activism. And so our hope is that in obtaining some of the material that we produce, that it be put to use, like in the classroom. We recently went to a high school not far away and had 6 classes in one session and 8 in another to show them parts of this film, and it was extremely rewarding and pretty amazing experience to see the impact that a film like this can have on students who, of course, have no handle on any of this history, really. How could they? To me, that's what gives hope to our future collectively, our ability to communicate like that. But also that's a good part of the motivation. So, you know, of course, we would love direct help, but also our hope is that the impact of our work is spread, you know, by people grappling with the issues that we're raising and taking them farther and making the connections to their own communities, to their own homes, and organizing with it. That, of course, would be the greatest gift. And in the case of political prisoners, these are, of course, are people who, you know, shared a set of values about being able to create a more humanitarian world and a more liberatory place for various peoples and communities, both within the borders and externally. And, you know, they've sacrificed a tremendous part of their youth and their lives in general to that end. And we can't forget who they are, where they are, or what they've done, and that we can't really expect to create current movements that take seriously anything about really transforming power relations and dynamics and values without embracing the people who came before us and who brought us to this point. And so, you know, our hope is that eventually we can succeed in some campaigns to get some of these people out before they all die behind bars and in cages. So, you know, there's a bit of work to be done, no question.
Right. Well, I want to thank you so much, and I can say on behalf of Peter and the rest of folks who contribute to Your World News that you have comrades in us, and if there's anything that we can continue to do with the platform that we have, we have listeners from all the way from D.C. to folks that listen religiously in Norway that are no doubt listening right now, and so whatever we can do to use our platform and our resources to help with the work that you're doing in terms of supporting political prisoners, and as you said, you know, so importantly to try to get them out before they physically expire behind those bars, and it's no way to live behind U.S. prison bars, especially in 23 and a half hour lockdown like some of them are experiencing right now. I thank you for your work, and we'll continue to fight on the front lines with you. So thank you for spending some time with us this evening.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, I'm looking forward to hearing about how the showings of the film go in the D.C. area. I know this is a pretty full month of 7 different events, and also people can contact us if they're interested in getting the film to show in some other part of the country. Please get a hold of us. The website's easy, freedomarchives.org, and we're happy to be in touch with lots of folks.
Thank you. Thank you so much again, Claude. Appreciate it. I look forward to talking to you for a long time heading into the future.
All right. A great beginning. Thanks so much.
All right. No problem. Take care.
All right. You too.
Well, that was a good interview, man. Why was it good? Not based on anything that we did, but based on the fact that information was passed through. We're simply doing what we are supposed to do, but the information that was passed through Peter on that exchange with Brother Claude Marx is so very important. So I hope that people that are listening right now, as you know, or as you may not know if you're listening for the first time, you know, once the show is over, the link becomes an automatic archive. Please cut and paste the link, download it to your iPod or your MP3 player, whatever you have onto your iTunes, what have you, and take it with you and sit down and listen to it with somebody. It's a good conversation starter. Send a link to all your networks. You know, tell them to tune in, not because it's Solomon and Peter hosting the show, but because of the information that's being exchanged on this very show. You know, that's what we've got to do for any medium that we have, whether it's music or a film or another great, podcast that's out there. We've got to exchange that information. We've got to get the information out there to the masses, especially when some of those folks are very close to us. So, this is a really important topic, and in terms of fighting for justice for folks within the American Indian Movement, obviously former Black Panthers, folks within the Chicano Movement, and there's so many other organizations out there that we could just go on and on about, as well as individuals. So it's so very important, because if not, I'm trying to tell you, Peter is telling you, that history will continue to repeat itself as it is actively being repeated now. We know that there are recent folks behind bars that are political prisoners right now. And I'm so glad that he mentioned the
the renditions. I mean, this U.S. government has routinely sent folks that they've captured on foreign lands. On foreign lands, has sent them to be tortured, in places like, yes, Egypt. You know what I'm saying? Yes, Egypt. These things are really important. And I can't emphasize it any more than what I am right now, because but if you see me, it's really important that we get this information out there. I don't think anybody would want to be tortured any place, let alone, being shipped around by the U.S. government, being shipped over here. You know, torture this person, torture them until they give us the information that you want. And you know, if somebody is pulling out your fingernails, your toenails, is waterboarding you, and they do it enough time, you are going to, even if you were in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they say, tell us, admit to us that you were in Yemen. Tell us that you were in Pakistan. Tell us that you were, here, you were there. And you know that you weren't. Just to escape the pain and the terror that is being inflicted upon your body and mind, you will say whatever it takes. Most people will say whatever it takes, to have that pain stop. And the rest of us, the rest of the folks that don't, you just may die. You may die or be maimed physically or mentally for the rest of your life. And if you do admit, you're going to be behind bars for the rest of your life. Even if you didn't do it. Especially if you didn't do it, and you were forced into a confession. So, Peter, any final comments before we end the show? Again, it's so bittersweet ending the show,
most definitely. I can't say enough about Claude Mark and just the information that he dropped on us tonight. And by way of bringing some historical realities back to the front of our minds, hopefully for those of us that are a little bit older, maybe for some others for the first time, some new information. But for all of us, hopefully a reminder that we need to continue to self-educate and to learn the truth and the reality about this country's history, as well as the ongoing political activity in this country by the government. And what was striking, Solomon, is obviously a number of things stood out, but if I could just highlight a couple. When I asked Claude if he could, fill in the blank of, answer that question that Noam Chomsky posed in an essay some years ago, COINTELPRO, what the bleep was that? Claude's abbreviated summation of COINTELPRO, very succinctly, was the U.S. government's, quote, militarized attack on radicals in the U.S. Those are sobering words. Those are really sobering words. I love the way he distilled it down into that, because we can hold on to that. I mean, that's simple enough to understand. It's the U.S. government's militarized attack on radicals. That's sobering information. To know that this government has a history, a long and sordid history, of organized militarized attack. Think about that, an attack, not defense, not reaction to, but an attack on radicals in the United States, not on criminals, right? Not on foreign invaders, but on U.S. citizens, just radicals because of their political beliefs. So those are very sobering words, and I think we need to let those sink in with us going away from this tonight. And then secondly, to tie that into, the way he said, of what that means for us today, and in terms of understanding the way he phrased it, that the U.S. government is dealing with radicals and radical groups and radical thoughts and whatever the government deems to be dangerous or unacceptable. And what he said, preemptive ways, okay, that there's preemptive political attacks now being waged by the U.S. government, and the kind of things you he just mentioned, you know, the rendition, the torture, in addition to, you know, the incarceration that we talked about at the top of the show, but preemptive political attacks. Every one of us tonight, we need to be aware of that. We need to be mindful of that. That is the state of mind of the apparatus of the U.S. government, is to, for the U.S. government to make preemptive political attacks on those individuals and groups whom they deem to be too radical for the maintenance of the status quo, for the maintenance of the imperial capitalist plutocracy ruling class in this country. Those are very sobering realities, and for those of us that are involved in radical organizations and groups and just whatever is, you know, political and outside of the frames of accepted ideological discourse in this country, we need to be aware of that. We need to be very, very aware of that, and also to educate about that wherever we go. So real sobering thoughts tonight from Claude Mark, and I hope that we all have learned a little bit about history, but even more importantly, learning about the state of the apparatus right now, what kind of battle we are in right now, and how we need, what we need to do with that information to move forward. And, you know, so there's obviously a lot we all need to take away from that that conversation tonight.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. You know, and just, you know, if folks are listening and want some resources, some additional resources that in terms by way of links regarding COINTELPRO, anything like that, you know, email us. You know our email. It's yourworldnews2010@gmail.com. That's YOURWORLDNEWS 2010@gmail.com. And we will disseminate to you any information that we have, you know, regarding COINTELPRO, and even put you on our mailing listserv. So for Peter Fowler, I'm Solomon, and this has been Your World News. Special thanks to Claude Marks and Freedom Archives for the work they did with COINTELPRO 101. Thanks to Claude Marks for taking some time out of his busy schedule and coming on our show. And we'll see you next time. Luda Continua.
Listen, Hussein, together in bed, giving H-E-A-D.
And I want to say, actually, I'm going to preempt that. I have a special song for us to take us out. It is a cool track, you know, and since Claude's joined us from Northern California, and this is cool out of the Bay Area, I'll let them ride with the last word.
Yeah. Sounds good, man.
We off in the Oakland Hills. Guys in the one time.
If you got beef with COP, throw a Molotov at the PIGs, cause they be harassing you and me. You gotta understand that we still not free. If you got beef with COP, throw a Molotov at the PIGs, cause they be harassing you and me. You gotta understand that we still not free.
Don't trust the police, no justice, no peace. They got me face down in the middle of the street, pistol with me with the heat. Shit is just sizzling, trying to serve me with the all you can eat. Murder beef, I'm a young black heterosexual male. Don't drink, drink, don't smoke, don't sell. That's the real reason why they want me up in jail. They want me to fail, I resist and rebel. See, I give a fuck about the COP, PIGs. I wanna lock and shake them like a PIC, cause they wanna see me D.I.E. Tommy Cash under my, I'm a pre-OG. Dark Soviet, Soviet, bitches, venomous, bogus, phone, 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 holding it down for open. Flows new, at least smoking in the shit we doing, we hoping. Don't just know this and get the notice to throw a Molotov. Music.
I'm not a fan of the B.I.G. cause they be the one.
hesitation. I'm peeling off like stolen registration and leave a dollar smoke. Yeah, I'm the starter boss. That they've been